10 years ago, we had a very big and long brainstorming session that actually lasted probably several days and came up with the Art Museum, which is an imaginary museum that's housed in a book. And it contains nearly 3,000 exhibits, including paintings, sculptures, ceramics, frescoes, stained glass windows, and lots of other things, including one amazing suit of armour. And it is, in fact, the greatest collection of art ever assembled. And it gives the reader a complete overview of world art from cave paintings to works made in the last decade, in the last few years.
And it really is an art museum in a book. You've even laid it out like a museum, complete with halls to wander through and numbered galleries.
Yes, exactly. So it is organized like a museum. It doesn't have page numbers, but galleries and rooms. And we refer to what you would normally refer to as essays in a book. So they're called wall texts. And the information about each work is, of course, called a label. And you can browse through it as you might stroll around a museum. You can dip in and out and take in as much as or as little as you like. But it's very unlike a museum in that there are no museums, no collections in the world that can give you this complete overview.
Are there pieces here that would be very difficult to see anywhere in the real world?
Absolutely. I mean, that was one of the most exciting things about putting the book together, was that we needed to include works that were very, very rarely seen outside the home that they live in. Many of those are in private collections. I mean, we wrangled with lots of collectors in various places in Europe and in the States. There are also frescoes that are very, very difficult to visit. For example, just north of the border from Korea in China, there are frescoes that you can only visit if you get special visas. You're not allowed to report on what you've seen in that area, so they're impossible to actually see. There are also groups of pictures that were very difficult to find. One of my favourite rooms in the museum is the Impressionist room. So how do you show Impressionism? And in 1874, in April, a group of artists put together an exhibition in a studio and included a work by Claude Monet, which was called Impression Sunrise. And this group of pictures that were exhibited were kind of slated by the press, and one critic said, yes, indeed, they are only impressions. And that's where the term Impressionism came from.
So this was one of the most famous exhibitions in the history of art.
Exactly, it was. And so our first room of Impressionist paintings in the Art Museum collects together several works from that very first exhibition, several works from Paris, there's one from Las Vegas, there's one from Kansas City, there's another from Montreal, there's one from Boston. We've gone around the world and found this great group of works and put them together, and they really make sense in a room.
So let's walk through a bit of the museum collection, if we could, beginning with the very first galleries, show the famous cave paintings from Lascaux. Themselves nearly impossible to see these days. I think you have to see a reproduced cave if you go to Lascaux.
You're absolutely right, yes. Many of the prehistoric caves are impossible to visit.
What do you love about the Lascaux paintings?
The mystery of what they were made for, who they were made by. Are they telling us stories? Are they narratives? Are they, in fact, like photography? They're making a record of something that they've seen. I find your imagination can run riot when you look at these paintings and try to work out what they were painted for, because nobody really knows.
Well, I want to pick up on that idea, because it seems to me that one way to look at this book is as a kind of prolonged meditation on the evolution of human ideas about beauty. What do you notice when you approach it in that light?
Well, I give myself a rule that if I'm in a museum or art gallery and I see something and I don't like it, I will make myself look again. If I don't understand it or get it, I force myself to look at it again. And I think that you're right, that our concept of beauty has changed enormously over this 30,000-year period of human creativity. But also, art today doesn't have to be beautiful. It doesn't have to be aesthetically pleasing. It can also have a conceptual interest, so something that's intellectual or thought-provoking. So sometimes beauty isn't even an element that's important in a work of art. I mean, if we're looking at some of the installations or works by Ilya Kabakov, for example, in the book, the Russian installation artist, I wouldn't say that it's beautiful, but conceptually it's very interesting. If you look at Anthony Gormley, who's a British sculptor, has made an installation that of all these figures, they're actually casts of his body, that are on a beach in England. And as the tide comes in, the cast, the figures, the human figures disappear. And as the tide goes out, they reappear again. I mean, it's conceptually interesting, but it's also exquisitely beautiful.
So when you said, you have a rule for yourself that when you go through a museum, if you see something you don't like, you make yourself go over and look at it again. Why? Why do you do that?
Because I think that what I've learned to date is what I've learned to date, and what an artist is perhaps telling me is to look at what I might learn in the future. It's sometimes extremely difficult to be open to something that is new. And when we first look at a work of art that we might not get, it's a challenge and it's difficult to accept it. It's difficult to let it in. And so this, I think it's extremely important to perhaps go away. You might walk around the gallery and go back to it again and try and look at it in a different way. Try to feel different about it. I remember as a 13-year-old, my parents had just moved to Brussels. And so lots of our aunts and uncles used to come and stay with us. And my job one Saturday afternoon was to take my aunt around the museum in Brussels. And I thought, I was 13 years old, and I thought, oh no, please, do I have to do this? And I went with Auntie Diana, and she was very passionate about looking at pictures. And I sort of walked very fast ahead of her because I didn't want to be seen with this person who was so serious about art. And I walked around the whole museum, and I came back and joined her from sort of behind where she'd been walking. And I saw her through in the gallery looking extremely hard and intensely at a picture, and I noticed that she was crying. Now, as a sort of 13, 14-year-old, I was a little bit embarrassed by that, but I was also intrigued. And she left the room, and I went to look at the picture that she was looking at. It was a Netherlandish painting of A Descent from the Cross. And I looked at it, and I thought, how can something like that, this inanimate object, how can it make you actually cry? And I was absolutely fascinated by this. And I stood there trying to make myself understand what it was that she'd seen. And I walked around the room and I came back, I looked again. And that was my first, I suppose, real experience of being moved by something that was just flat on a canvas. And I found it, the colours, the expression on the people's faces, it didn't move me the way it did my aunt, but it was an experience that I will never forget. So that's why I sort of learned, I suppose it's through experience, this idea of going back and trying again.
I always remember a story. There's an art historian who wrote a book called Museums and Tears. He told a story about, there's some famous paintings by Mark Rothko in Texas, his famous black paintings, and they're just big black canvases. And he said the guards at the museum told him that there are a few people, and there's one woman in particular who comes every year, and she stays 2 days, and she sits in front of those paintings and she cries. And they said a lot of people cry in front of those paintings.
Isn't that wonderful? I think that's such a lovely story.
I do too.
Yeah, and so true.
I wanted to ask you one other thing. You made reference to a couple of times, there's a phrase, the story of art. And I know that's a famous phrase. It's been used by famous art historians. It's been the title of books. What does that mean to you, the story of art? And what story does this book of 30,000 years of art tell?
I think the art museum tells many, many different stories. It has many strands going through it. It shows you that so many things that we make today in Western culture look like works that were made in Iran in the 12th century, and that in fact there really is nothing new on the planet. We have the same concerns, we have very often the same approach to beauty, although it can change from culture to culture. Our fundamental concerns are the same, and this is a book with many, many strands of his stories through it.
Oh, Amanda, thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you for having me.